Listen. Hello?
We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the super fans.
But they are who we thought they were.
Hello. Welcome to another weekly edition of Next Fan Up Show, the show by the fan for the fans. I'm Justin. I'm your Seahawks superfan. You'll hear myself and Nick, the Chiefs superfan, as we talk to the other superfans from across the league as we recap all of the games. Before we do that, though, let's give a quick shout-out to our sponsor, BetDSI. That's BetDSI.com. They've been in the business for over 20 years. Very safe, very fast payouts. Use our promo code FANUP10 to get $10 off of your first deposit. You'll also get a 100% bonus. BetDSI is where you can go to gamble on your favorite sports, on your favorite leagues like the NFL, or on unusual stuff like the election. If you have a particular candidate that you want to put money for, or more likely certain candidate you want to put money against, go to BetDSI and make sure you use our promo code FANUP10. All right, let's get to it, starting with Nick.
All right, well, it's me again, your Kansas City Chiefs superfan, Nick, and I'm going to be running through these games, both early, middle, and at least one late game featuring a particular team that's going to beat the Steelers. But first up, we had an early game playing in London. It was the Indianapolis Colts supposedly visiting the Jacksonville Jaguars in London. But the Jaguars came away with this one, theoretically at home, 30-27. I'm joined with both of our superfans here, Ryan and Dan. And so Ryan, our Jaguars superfan, this was a really interesting one down to the end. These London games tend to be sort of a mixed bag, but your game pulled away with this particular one in a bit of ugly fashion. But how are you feeling getting your first win, and how did this all come about?
Well, first, as you said, talking about early, I'm here on the West Coast. I played a show with my band until midnight last night, and I still woke up at 6:30 this morning, all the while not knowing if it would be worth it just to watch my team, because, you know, we could have gone on for. But the game, it could have been not interesting, and I would have loved that, because it was 23-6, and I was just thinking the whole time, like, let's be a professional team and close this out. But of course, as Andrew Luck seems to do a lot, he got his team coming back. Once they went hurry up, it messed with the Jags defense, which did great up until they went hurry up. And yeah, it was a crazy quarter going back and forth. The play that eventually sealed it for us was a short throw to Allen Hurns, who ran all the way from one side to the other and got a touchdown. And just, you know, last week was a dark depression day. I don't care that they weren't great in the end and almost gave it up. It's just a win, and that feels good, let me tell you.
Well, and for you, Dan, you know, it seems to have been the story of this team now for a few seasons running, and just that, you know, Luck can make things happen, but there's just so little around him. I mean, in particular, he didn't seem to be... the line was not blocking well for him, and the defense missed the chance at a few key stops. How are you feeling at this one?
Yeah, I mean, you said pretty well about the way the day went for the Colts. It was a slow start. They had two big drops on the first drive to start a three and out, and, you know, Andrew Luck can only do so much. I thought he was throwing the ball pretty well today. He had an unfortunate interception that bounced around a little bit before the Jaguars took their hands on it, but it's almost like no one's being held accountable. There's nobody at the head of the organization that says, hey, let's fix it by doing this. They just keep saying everybody needs to get something fixed. And, I mean, even Jim Irsay, I think, came out and said Andrew Luck needs to change the way that he's playing, but no one's offering any solutions to it. And it's just getting old. It's getting old fast. And I don't know. I've stood up for Chuck Pagano quite a while now, but when you start out slow every stinking week, somebody's got to be held accountable. And if, as a coach, you're not going to hold anybody accountable, then it's time for you to go. Dwayne Allen, I don't know what his problem is. He can't catch, save his life this year. He should be benched. Costanzo's been terrible all year. He should be benched. I mean, there's no repercussions out there right now for Indianapolis. They're just being let out there to go and play. And by the time that they wake up, they're already down 20-some points. They go to a no-huddle offense, which has been successful for them for the last couple of years, but they refuse to implement it as part of their strategy to get everybody awake. I don't like it. I don't know what's going on, but something's got to change.
And so it seems like a lot of a lot of the conversation around the Colts for a while now has been, who is the source of more problems? Is it the coach or is it the GM? And I think a lot of people tend to think it's the GM has failed to really build talent on this team, and Grigson's the one that needs to go. But it sounds like you're frustrated with basically the staff from top to bottom.
Yeah, that's the point I'm at. And Grigson, he's riding the wave of one draft class that included Luck, Hilton, and Dwayne Allen, but the only one doing anything right now is Luck. I don't know why the other two are getting credit. Hilton shows up in parts of the game, but he's not consistent yet. Dwayne Allen, he's garbage. I just don't know what to think. And then he's done decent, maybe decent, at getting a defensive line out there, but he's got no one around him. So even if the defensive line does their job, there's nobody showing up to make tackles for him.
Well, and for you, Ryan, you know, you guys get your first win of the season. It was looking like this might be a make-or-break game for your head coach's career. Just speaking of staffs that are sort of on the hot seat here, does this change at all, you know, the destinies of your front office and some of the coaches on your side?
Oh, absolutely. I don't know. I'm not sure if Shad Khan would have actually fired Gus Bradley, but maybe if they ended up losing this game where they had a big lead and still ended up losing, like I feel like a blowout or that situation happening, even though Shad Khan's been really stable, I feel like Gus Bradley definitely could have been gone. And he certainly may have saved his job today. And Bortles made a comment after the game saying that they thought, you know, the entire time they felt in control, even in the fourth quarter. And I love hearing that, whether it's true or not, because, you know, as a fan, me, I'm freaking out because it did seem like the same thing happening again, just like the Packers game, just like the Ravens game. And, you know, we might lose it. So I do believe today saved Gus Bradley's job. And I'm fine with that. I would have been fine if they fired him had they lost because, you know, what are you going to do? You can't accept losing for that long. But I think it's better ultimately for the team not to have fired your head coach. And so doubly happy for the win today for sure.
Great. Well, I hope, you know, both of your teams are, you know, getting it together even more and improving once you're now back stateside.
Thanks. I'm rooting for the other 31 NFL teams so that we can move forward with our team.
That was, having that first overall pick was maybe, you know, the greatest achievement of the last, you know, last few years. It certainly helped.
Hands down.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, guys.
All right, thank you. Go Jags.
All right, and it's now time to talk about the Atlanta Falcons' total beatdown at home of the Carolina Panthers, 48-33. And I'm sure our very excited Falcons superfan, Tim, he's here, and I think he will be able to break it down in the level of passion that is necessary. So take it away, Tim.
I'm actually going to be really even this time. The first thing I'm going to ask is, can we please just get a little bit of respect for Matt Ryan? My favorite thing from last week was seeing Pro Football Focus saying that the reason that Julio Jones was off to a slow start was Matt Ryan's fault. Matt Ryan today hit 9 receivers. Julio Jones led all of those receivers with 12 catches for 300 yards and a touchdown, which was a franchise record. Also, Matt Ryan setting a franchise record with 503 passing yards against what used to be considered a formidable Carolina defense. I think it's funny how quickly they threw away Josh Norman, and then all of a sudden they're like, oh man, we probably shouldn't have done that. But I mean, just an offensive thrashing by the Falcons. You know, on defense, not ideal. We did knock Cam Newton out of the game. You know, not going to be, you know, bragging about an injury, but I will bring up the fact that I find it ironic that the player that knocked him out of the game, Deion Jones, was the one that Cam Newton taunted earlier in the game. So, Cam, you're getting a little bit of a taste of your own medicine right there. Shut your mouth or we're going to hit you in it. You know, on the whole, I mean, just a really, really good game. Going out to an early lead. But, you know, not going to lie, I mean, 2 minutes left in this game, I was nervous. And, you know, sitting there, you know, watching and listening and really thinking that we might not pull this one out. But, you know, mad respect to Robert Alford again. You know, he gets picked on a lot and he does a lot of stupid things for the Falcons, playing, you know, opposite Desmond Trufant because he gets targeted a lot. But that pick six to seal the game was a lot of fun. You know, it doesn't get easier. Next week we have Denver. I think in Denver. So that's not great, but you know, for this week, you know, pretty happy with the win. I wish it was a little bit better. They got a lot closer than I wanted to see them get. But on the whole, rise up, Atlanta.
Yeah, Alford also had three passes defense. So, you know, in the stat sheet anyway, a decent game for him. You mentioned the really eye-popping performers on your side, but also Devontae Freeman got going a bit more than we've seen earlier in the season. He had 13 carries for 57 yards, just 4.4 per carry and a touchdown. But obviously, this was really an aerial attack, although it's got to be good to see that you were able to move it on the ground as well.
Yeah, I mean, we only had 90 yards rushing, which I think is a season low for us, because Devontae Freeman and Tevin Coleman have actually been a really good combo throughout the year. You know, Devontae only getting 57 yards and Tevin Coleman only getting 19, that's not great. But, I mean, if I'd have told you, you know, before this game started, Atlanta only rushes for 90 yards, you're probably going to say that it's a loss. But, I mean, this win was definitely, you know, Matt Ryan all the way. And, I mean, our defensive line was surprisingly good. I mean, we had 8 quarterback hits. We sacked Cam Newton once. You know, we're not a team that's known for our pass rush. In fact, we're probably known for being laughed at when it comes to pass rush. So, you know, the fact that we're able to at least get in and pressure people and collapse the pocket and then, you know, let the coverage guys do what they do, you know, it could lead to some really good things for Atlanta. So I'm excited to see where the season goes, but I'm also, you know, drinking some cold water at the same time, because last year we started 5-0 and ended 8-8. So, you know, 16 weeks. Or 16 games is a long season, so we'll see what happens. But as of right now, number one in the division. And I don't know what New Orleans is doing, but Tampa Bay is losing right now, so I am on board.
And from the Carolina perspective, sort of, I mean, obviously this is they are not getting off to a good start this season. I think you guys actually broke it down really well in our off-season sort of preview of the division with our Carolina superfan Jimmy, and I think everybody in the division sort of expected Carolina to take a step back. I was not one of those people. I mean, I honestly was. I'm really been surprised that they've stumbled as much as they have so far. But you know, so what can you tell us in terms of what's going on with on their side?
I mean, Carolina was playing with an injured offensive line. You know, when you have to start Mike Remmers at left tackle, things aren't going to go well. You know, on the sack, Dwight Freeney just clowned him with the, you know, the half fake spin move, come back the other way and just slam Cam Newton. You know, these are things that you can't have. When you have Cam Newton, he has to have space. He has to have time in the pocket and then give him the ability to, you know, run out when the play breaks down. If he's getting pressured immediately, he's not good. And this has been, you know, him throughout his career. If the offensive line isn't playing well, then neither is Cam Newton. So, and I mean, I think the most telling stat is after he went out, Derek Anderson had a better game than him. Yeah, Derek Anderson threw 2 interceptions, but I mean, he had more yardage, he had more touchdowns, and he didn't get sacked. So obviously that's going to count for something.
Interesting. Well, that's going to be something to keep an eye on. Obviously, it's going to be a big storyline moving forward. But congratulations there, Tim. I'm sure that at least a couple of haters were shut up this week. And good luck next week.
Thank you, man.
Cheers. And in one of the biggest upsets of the weekend, the New England Patriots were shut out at home by the Buffalo Bills. I'm here with our Bills superfan, Robert. And Robert has been celebrating heavily. So in case you have any trouble understanding his words, that is why. But so Robert, you know, take it away. This seemed like a fumble fest, but man, shutting out the Pats in Foxborough, that's got to be fun to watch.
It is. I mean, obviously they've owned the division for years, dating back, I think, to really, honestly, since I've graduated high school. It's been a long time since they've owned that division for the most part. So always fun to get. I realize, you know, third string quarterback in, but always fun to get a win. I don't care who they have lined up. I thought the first half was a good omen when the Edelman had that long play right at, you know, the touchdown right at the first play of the game was called back. It was kind of a good omen, and it held through. Bills looked great in the first half, were able to move the ball. New England seemed like they really weren't ready for what Buffalo was doing with LeSean McCoy. Buffalo was also incorporating Robert Woods, I think, a little more than they thought. He had a great game today. Second half was pretty even, but I mean, the first half, the Bills got after Bissett. They could do nothing on offense except for the one 58-yard play to Martellus Bennett. Other than that, they literally did nothing. You know, if you're a Buffalo Bills fan or just a fan of teams that aren't constantly in contention, it was a legitimately fun game to watch.
Well, and Zach Brown was all over the field for you guys with 18 total tackles, a sack, three tackles for loss, two QB hits. You know, there was a lot of worry about how this defense was going to, you know, persevere through all these injuries. How did it, you know, I guess how confident are you that this can be repeated?
It's funny. The defense, three of the four games this year, has looked really good. So I feel fairly confident that, you know, this could be something that just kind of continues through the year. Their defense looked leaps and bounds better than last year. You know, everything notwithstanding the Jets game where, you know, they just kind of got out-coached. But Zach Brown played lights out. Yeah, he had 18 tackles. I think he had three tackles for loss. He had a sack. He was all over the field today. Sometimes it's him. Sometimes it's Preston Brown. You know, he was just kind of a minimum salary guy that they brought in, who in Tennessee last, you know, past couple of years been, you know, known as a speed guy, decent cover guy, but really couldn't do much else. He's showing this year that, you know, he could do a little bit.
Great. And so, you know, from the Patriots' perspective, obviously they get Tom Brady back next week. But you had Martellus Bennett got five receptions for 109 yards. They were able to get, you know, some things moving on the ground with 90 yards on 22 carries from a variety of backs, but still came away with 0 points. You know, do you expect that this is something that the Pats are not going to be able to shake, or do you think that they're going to snap right back at it as frustratingly consistent as they generally do?
They'll be fine. Honestly, the way the game flow went, it's just everything was just kind of in Buffalo's favor, and it just kind of snowballed and snowballed. But I think that when you bring, I mean, the difference between a Jacoby Brissett and a Tom Brady is insane. So they'll be, I mean, they're going to be fine once he comes back next week. I feel sorry for, I believe they're playing the Browns. I feel sorry for any Browns fans next week. Because he's probably going to come back with a big chip on his shoulder. But their offense will be fine. Their defense, you know, played fairly well. I wouldn't expect the, you know, from their offense, I think they had something around 275 yards, 277. I wouldn't expect that again the rest of the year. It'll be a team that, you know, does very well offensively with Tom Brady at the helm. He's already proven he doesn't need a lot of weapons in order to do it. So I think they'll be fine.
Great. Well, keep soaking in that victory. Enjoy it, and I'll be talking to you next week.
All right. Absolutely. Good luck tonight.
Yeah, thanks. And we now go to the Chicago Bears. We get their first win of the season at home, 17-14 over their division rival, the Detroit Lions. And, Tom, you know, I'm interested to hear your thoughts on this game because you've been pretty down on the Bears. So how did they get themselves together, really, after some really ugly showing so far this season?
Well, the short answer to that question is they didn't get themselves together. And I think that you and the rest of the country should thank the NFL for not subjecting you to them in prime time again this week. neither one of these teams really deserved to win, to be perfectly honest. It was a really sloppy, pretty awful game, especially in the Lions side, but the Bears side too. There were a total of 18 penalties for 131 yards. And there were just mistakes all over the field. And just to give you a typical feel for how the game went, there were 2 minutes left, and the Bears were up 17-6. So it's a two-score game. And they punted the ball and allowed Andre Roberts to return the ball for a TD in a two-score game. And then they got the two-point conversion. So now they're 3 points down, and the whole game rides on an onside kick, which fortunately for the Bears, they got. But it was just typical of the game that happened. The difference in the game was a big difference in the game was turnovers. In this case, the Lions were the guilty party. Matthew Stafford threw two really damaging interceptions. they were deep in Bears territory when he threw an interception to Jacoby Glenn on what was apparently a miscommunication between Matthew Stafford and Golden Tate. And there were miscommunications all over the field for them. The Bears got that saved the Bears at least a field goal. And then in the fourth quarter, the Lions were moving the ball really well. And they, once again, really deep in Bears territory, they were going to score a touchdown. And it seemed like another miscommunication, this time with Eric Ebron, and DeAndre Hall intercepted the ball. And that was, well, at the time, I thought that was the ball game. You know, it was about 5 minutes left, and it was a two-score game. And the Bears had to try really hard to try to give it back away. And neither one of these teams really wanted to win. I won't say there weren't positives. Brian Hoyer played pretty well, and he protected the ball really well. He didn't throw any interceptions. Jimmy Johnson said at halftime that he thought Jay Cutler threw his last pass as a Chicago Bear. And I almost died from joy. And then I realized that I didn't believe it. And I think Cutler will be back next week because that's just the way we roll here. But we'll find out. Eddie Royal was on fire. He had 7 catches for 111 yards, 16 yards per catch. He looked great. And a lot of the reason for that was because of the way that the Lions were playing defense. They and the Bears were both of them, they both looked across the line of scrimmage. I know they did on defense. And they thought, that offense stinks. We'll just lay back, make sure nothing beats us deep, and we'll wait for them to stop themselves. And for the most part, that worked all game on both sides. You know, it was a 17-14 game. There wasn't a whole lot of scoring going on. It was a defensive struggle, and all they did was sit back and try to prevent the deep pass. So Eddie Royal is the slot guy. He was running short passes for big chunks of yardage, and he had a very good game. Some of the younger guys played really well. Cody Whitehair had a really solid game at center. He's much stronger than I gave him credit for. And he's pretty smart, too. The whole line played pretty well. The Lions tried to attack them with a lot of stunts, and they handled it pretty well. Jordan Howard, the rookie running back, 5th-round pick, had a great game. I think Jeremy Langford has started his last game as a Bear as long as Howard is healthy. He ran for 111 yards. He had 4.8 yards per carry. He had a great game. He's really deceptive because he doesn't look that big, but he's obviously strong because whenever he hits anybody, he just moves the pile. The Lions would occasionally hit him behind the line of scrimmage, and the Bears wouldn't lose yardage simply because he'd be able to power his way through and get back to the line of scrimmage and sometimes even make a couple of yards. Excuse me. And that makes a huge difference, you know, when you're an offense like the Bears and you're not starting out in a hole. Overall, neither team really deserved to win, but the Bears did. I'm happy for them. I think you take the win however you can get it. And at least we know they won't go 0-16. I never really thought that would happen, but, you know, you never know till you get a win. that makes me happy.
Yeah, certainly. And, you know, you already sort of touched upon it, but, you know, Brian Hoyer in this game, at least in terms of the stat sheet, on basically every level, he outdueled Matthew Stafford. We know your opinion of Jay Cutler, but, I mean, do you think he's a better fit for this offense or taking fewer risks as a passer in general and being more consistent works better with this offense? I mean, do you think he's just, I don't know. I mean, is he a better player than Jay Cutler? And do you think this team would be better off under Hoyer?
It's an interesting question. Cutler is obviously the better, he's the better athlete, and he's got a cannon for an arm. And what Cutler does is, he's a see it, throw it quarterback. He drops back, he looks, and he waits for receivers to get open. And he waits, and he waits, and he waits, and he runs, and he waits. And then he either gets hit and sacked, or he runs out of bounds. And in the NFL, he's got a cannon for an arm, and he can fit it in if a guy gets even a sliver of space. But in the NFL, I don't think you can win that way. And I think that's one major reason why the guy's a loser. Hoyer is not like that. He throws with anticipation, and he gets rid of the ball fast, which is why he wasn't sacked much today. And he's also reasonably accurate. So if you ask me my preference, I prefer to have him at quarterback because I think he's an NFL quarterback that can actually win you some games. And he took the Texans to the playoffs last year, something Jay Cutler hasn't done in a very long time. So I guess the answer to your question is I personally think he's the better quarterback in that I personally would rather have him. But it is a debatable issue because, you know, physically Cutler is the better quarterback.
Interesting. Great. Well, I wish you guys luck. I hope you, you know, keep adding to that win total. I don't think you guys are done. And thanks for coming on.
Oh, thank you.
All right, and we're now moving on to the Washington Redskins, who held on to win 31-20 over the Browns. This was another surprisingly competitive game by the Browns throughout most of it, and I'm sorry that that sounds very condescending, Ben, our Browns superfan, but most of us did not expect you guys to be competitive this year, and you made this one an interesting game. Any moral victory lessons out of this, or you know what excited you here?
Well, I think the thing I learned from this is we just have zero margin for error. I mean, we had that bogus PI call on Hayden that was for 50 yards. I mean, I was actually at the game. I was right there. Hayden barely touched him. And then, you know, we start fumbling the ball late in the second quarter, including one which we got back. But the ref, for whatever reason, I don't know, Neil, if you listened to the broadcast, they explained, like, why the refs didn't review that. But it was, like, pretty obvious that Duke Johnson fumbled the ball and got his own fumble back. He came out of the pile with the ball, but they still gave the ball to the Redskins. And so overall, just a pretty frustrating game. It's pretty clear we don't get any respect from the refs for this. And hopefully they send that tape to the, I don't know, NFL headquarters or whatever, and that ref gets fined. It's inexcusable. I mean, it's also inexcusable for Crow to be putting the ball in the turf and then Duke Johnson put the ball in the turf, but I don't know. Pretty disappointing.
Well, you mentioned both of those guys. I mean, despite the fumbles, they, you know, had a lot of production on the ground, in particular Isaiah Crowell with 15 carries for 112 and a touchdown. You know, Cody Kessler seemed like was respectable, but I don't know. I mean, are there signs of life, things that you can be building upon, or do you think this is going to continue to be a team that trips over itself for the rest of the year?
Well, I'm kind of hoping, starting going forward, Hugh can finally put that Wildcat stuff to the you know, to rest. It wasn't effective. Nobody likes it. It takes Cody Kessler out of his rhythm. I mean, I'm pretty happy with Cody Kessler, to be honest. I mean, he's a pretty soft tosser, but he looks better than I would have ever thought. I mean, I was pretty disappointed with the pick when we did it, but it doesn't look like the game's too big for him. So that's kind of exciting. And then when you think about the, you know, Isaiah Crowell, like 15 carries, you know, now the NFL leading rusher, you know, four games in, but how many carries did you say he had? 12?
15.
Like, that's not 15. That's not enough. So, I mean, the solution seems pretty obvious to me. Hand the ball off a little more.
Well, and we have Neil, our Redskins superfan, here as well, tuning in from the wee hours of the evening in Scotland. But, you know, for Washington, I mean, you guys were able to get it going on the ground as well. And, you know, we've had this running argument about who's better, Travis Kelce or Jordan Reed. Jordan Reed made a pretty good statement in terms of where he sits in the ranks of tight ends this year.
Yeah, he truly is Kirk Cousins' comfort blanket. He had a couple of touchdown catches, a reception early on in the game to get our first 14 points. And he finished the day with, I think it was 9 catches for 70-odd yards, a couple of touchdowns. I would agree with Ben, the referees were not great. And I have to say, Nick, I'm sitting here watching Red Zone, and it was just a horrendous call in the Dallas-San Francisco game, 15-yard penalty for the softest of hits. I mean, blooming heck, it was terrible. Anyway, so a poor night for the referees again. But back to this game, yeah, Jordan Reed is the man to help Kirk Cousins out. But we run the ball on the ground. They run the ball on the ground. But then anybody runs on the Washington's defense. And this is going to be a long season, Nick. It's going to be a long season. Our defense is terrible.
Well, it would still seem to at least be one where the Redskins have gotten themselves back to 500. with still games left to play, you know, within your division this week. You know, do the problems seem fixable? I mean, was it just a matter of a few players slipping in this game, or do you think this is something that could keep you guys out of the division race in the playoffs?
Yeah, I've seen, what, four games now, and I've seen no improvement from the defense at all. In fact, I think they've regressed in the running defense. We get very little push up front. Ryan Kerrigan picked up an injury tonight, an elbow injury, and that didn't look the best. So he could miss time, and he's probably our second best defender. Norman's not a problem. He got a pick. He played very well in the second half. First half, Pryor had a couple of good plays against him, but I don't see... You know, Nick, our defense is really bad. We teams can run all over us, and that's cutting out the time of possession for Cousins, and he's got to then start forcing the ball. But he's still got 31 points on the board at home, and you know we should have had this game dead and buried early on. One interesting fact, though, since the beginning of the 2015 season, so what's that, 20 regular season games, Washington have created 29 forced fumbles, recovering 20 of them, and that is number one in the league in both categories, and yet the defense is horrible.
Yeah, well, being able to catch those fumbles is certainly a skill, I guess, although then again, if you play against a bunch of accident-prone teams, that definitely helps to keep you in there. Well, either way, thanks a lot, Neil. I know it's late in your part of the world, but better luck next week. Hope you guys get back into that race for the NFC East.
Cheers, Nick.
Cheers. All right, that then brings us to the Houston Texans 27-20 win over the Tennessee Titans. And I am here with our Texan superfan, James. James, another strong defensive performance overall for you guys. Do you feel like you bounced back strong from that New England game?
Well, I mean, we put points on the board, so, I mean, yeah, there's a victory right there. We did not fumble any kickoffs, so another victory right there. And, you know, had we just scored this many points last week, we would have forced overtime. Yeah, so it's a little disappointing to see that we got up to a quick 14-0 lead and then gave that back. I mean, we never trailed in the game. I never really doubted we would end up winning in the end. But it's just kind of a hallmark of this team that we keep games a lot closer than they need to be. So that's a little frustrating to see. But what was really cool, our special teams did not cost us the game. And in fact, they won us the game. Will Fuller looks like the real deal. I know I was not super keen on trading up one spot just so that we could be guaranteed to pick up Will Fuller. But he had that 67-yard punt return for a touchdown. Beautifully drawn up play that had him get his earlier touchdown, and then another great play that Brock Osweiler actually picked up his passing in the mid range. Definitely heavily focused on the tight ends this week. Something that I guess they looked at the game film last week, realized just how poor he was doing in those nice, you know, 5 to 10 yard passes to the tight end, and they made some adjustments and definitely took advantage of that. Defense without J.J. Watt, it definitely showed how much we rely on generating pressure on the quarterback, just like a lot of NFL teams. Kareem Jackson was exposed as a sub-average or, you know, maybe right at average corner because he was beaten a couple times by Rashard Matthews for big gains. Jadeveon Clowney, though, he came up with a huge sack, the only sack the Texans recorded on the day, just after a Brock Osweiler interception. It was his second interception of the game. The first one, I'm not going to fault him for. He put a ball into DeAndre Hopkins, and it just kind of pinballed around into the Tennessee Titans. Probably shouldn't have forced it into Hopkins, but I could tell Hopkins was definitely getting frustrated by the lack of production. He only had one target in the first half. No catches, no yards, as I'm sure a lot of fantasy players are well aware of.
Yeah, I did find that pretty bizarre, because as great as Fuller was, it seemed like Hopkins was just totally out of this one.
Yeah, I mean, they had the various tight ends just running up the seam for, you know, that's how they got their first touchdown in the game. They could have gained, you know, another 100, 150 yards had we not had an injury to our tight end. Who would have known that, you know, the tight end could actually play a large role in an offense? I guess Bill O'Brien remembered a few things on his trip up to New England. But Tennessee definitely looked at the New England game plan and felt that, well, we can shut down the Houston Texans. All we have to do is take Hopkins out of the game, and, you know, maybe they won't score any points. Lamar Miller actually had some running lanes, despite Dwayne Brown still being inactive for the entirety of the season. But no, it looked a lot better. And it's comforting to know that even though other teams know to shut out or to try and shut out Hopkins to slow down our offense, a lot of teams are not nearly as dynamic, we'll say, as the New England Patriots, and able to shut down both Hopkins and Miller and take away the middle of the field. So that was a little bit good to see. And then always having a two-game lead in the division 4 games into the season is amazing.
Indeed. And on the Titans side, you know, I mean, I think a lot of people expected this team just to basically continue to be rebuilding. DeMarco Murray made his presence felt. He's now looking like a good signing, at least for what they're trying to do, with 25 carries for 95 yards and 2 touchdowns. But overall, I mean, from the Titans side, what can they take away from this game? And do you see improvement there?
Oh, very much so. Like last year, I didn't even use pencil. I mean, it was just penned in for 2 wins against the Titans. This year, they did a great job in the offseason, you know, addressing their offensive problems, a little bit on the defensive side, and then they just stockpiled draft picks. So this might be the last year that we're going to get 2 cheap wins over the Titans. And if we had played this way up in Tennessee, I'm not entirely sure that we would have come away with the victory. So there are brighter days ahead. It's not quite the, we'll say, Cleveland situation up there anymore.
All right, well, good stuff. Thanks a lot, man.
Thank you. Have a good one.
Cheers. And it is now time for us to talk to our Oakland Raiders superfan, Monty, about their 28-27 win over the Baltimore Ravens. And I've been looking forward to this talk, because I always enjoy talking to my nemesis, Monty. But I also realized in some of these earlier recaps that something was just a little bit off about my hosting game. I was stumbling a little bit more than usual. And I realized that's probably because the Chiefs didn't have an early game, and so I was not starting this hosting, you know, already about 4 or 5 beers deep. But I've rectified that, and in honor of you here, Monty, I have cracked open a tall bottle of Arrogant Bastard Ale.
There you go. That sounds exactly perfect for Nick, the Kansas City superfan. Arrogant Bastard Ale. Cheers.
Cheers. So, Monty, I watched almost all of this game. In fact, I think I did catch all of it. And I was watching this from the perspective of a Ravens fan, because obviously I wanted you to lose. And so explain to me how you did not win just because of a bunch of bad John Harbaugh decisions.
I got to tell you, man, that fourth quarter was awesome. There were 3 touchdowns in the last 6 minutes of the game, and the Raiders tried every way possible to hand that over to the Baltimore Ravens. I don't know how many bad, and maybe you can bring them up after the fact, but I'll just say this. The Baltimore Ravens surprised me on 2 fronts. Terrence West had a hell of a game running. He had over 100 yards and a touchdown. Raiders were not able to stop Baltimore's running attack, which, you know, surprised me. I wasn't expecting that to happen. But the Ravens' defense, on the other hand, was way better than the Raiders' offense. The only reason the Raiders were even in this game was because 3 of their 4 touchdown drives came on short fields. They had a nice punt return on one. They had a strip sack from Bruce Irvin on another one. I mean, Derek Carr only threw for 199 yards to get his 4 touchdowns. So yeah, it was a definite fluke, and the Raiders should have had that game. They were up 21-12 with like 6 minutes left. And all they would have had to do was kind of run that, I don't know if you call it the 4-minute offense, where you're able to just run out the clock and get some first downs and keep the clock running, and they were not able to do it. 3 and out, punt, and the Ravens were right back in the game, right down the field. Last note I'll say about the Ravens, and you can add anything you want. We were talking earlier in the week whether or not Steve Smith is in that Hall of Fame conversation. And, man, he had an awesome game today. And just even on plays that don't end up on SportsCenter, like, he's just so badass. Like, he just throw the defender off with one arm and just get that extra 3 yards for the first down. Like, he's a hell of a player. He's fun to watch. And at the end of the day, the Raiders really should have lost this game, or at least given Justin Tucker a chance for a long field goal at the end of the game. And it just didn't work out.
Yeah, well, I do think the Raiders, obviously, their defense is starting to click. It's starting to cement itself. You know, obviously, it's been put together by a lot of recent additions, and they had a couple of very ugly outings to start off the season, but they've really locked it down, and I thought that their game plan against the Ravens was pretty good. I mean, the Ravens, they're probably the best thing that they do is their deep passing game, their vertical passing game. And the Raiders just made sure with the pass rush that it was just going to be impossible for Flacco to get the time for those plays to develop and just force Flacco into the short pass game. And that's really not his forte. In fact, the whole team isn't built that way. Their targets aren't built for the short and intermediate pass game. And Flacco, weirdly, I mean, he can throw the best deep balls of probably anybody in the league practically, but he's just not that accurate on short passes, and they're just not set up well to do that. But the one thing that sort of changed, as you were mentioning, you know, the Raiders really ran out in front in this game. But the Ravens started turning it around when they started handing off the ball to Terrence West. He finished with over 100 yards. He was averaging 5.4 yards per attempt. But the coaching decisions that were pulling my hair out as a Raiders hater watching this game were, you know, late in the game, the Raiders had the ball. Not quite in the red zone, or at least let's see, where were they? I think with like a fumble recovery or something like that. Oh wait, no, they did drive down, but either way, so they were facing a fourth down, you know, due to both, you know, they weren't able to make it. They were maybe in the far edge of Janikowski's range. But this was still a close game. And for the Ravens, like, you shouldn't be, if you have the confidence that your offense is going to be able to get you back in this thing, you shouldn't be afraid of a field goal. You take that as a defensive stop and call it good. But the Raiders committed a personal foul at the end of the play, which was total phantom. But either way, the Ravens, rather than just forcing the Raiders to try for a field goal, a long field goal, they decided to take the 15-yard penalty, hoping that this would push the Raiders out of field goal range. But of course, Derek Carr throws a nice pass, is able to convert on that series, and then of course the Raiders score a touchdown, and it looked like they had put the game out of reach for the Ravens. And then later in the game, the Ravens were still able to come back in it, and they get the ball back down 1 point, And so basically the final, like halfway through the final series, you know, the Ravens had the ball. They had first and 10 at the 50, at midfield, knowing that all they need is a field goal to win this game. There's a minute left. So what do you do if you're at midfield with a minute left and down a point? You do a few runs. You make sure that, you know, you inch yourself closer to good field goal range, and you make sure that you're not going to give the opponent the ball with any time left. And just win by fait accompli. So what do? They throw four straight passes. Yeah, and every single one of them incomplete. Flacco pass incomplete short left, Flacco incomplete short middle, Flacco incomplete short left, Flacco incomplete short middle, and they turn over on downs and never get themselves into field goal range and lose the game. Because with their kicker, Tucker, I mean, man, his kickable range is probably, you know, I think you could be reasonably confident even if you get him to in a position to make a 60-yard field goal. But they never gave him that chance, and they let the Raiders win. And that upsets me as a Chiefs fan.
Those last four catches, one was a drop. I mean, the ball would have kept going. One guy totally dropped it. The second one, the third-round draft pick for the Raiders, Shalik Calhoun, he's a defensive lineman. It was actually the fourth-down play. He dropped back at least 15 yards back and like kind of jumped up and almost got the ball, and he gave the window for Flacco to complete that pass, like, was inches, man. Like, I was totally surprised to see him even back there in coverage, and I don't know if Flacco would have been surprised if he saw it on tape, but it was just a hell of a play from a defensive lineman to get that far back and make a play. Last thing I'll say about a defense for the Ravens is I thought that it took a little bit of guts for for Jim Harbaugh to go for it on fourth down. So Joe Flacco's one-yard touchdown quarterback sneak came on fourth and goal from the one. Yeah, you know, I'm sure a lot of coaches would have conservatively kicked the field goal at that point, but he went for it. And there's a lot of different fluky things that should have happened. So you mentioned the the 15-yard penalty that would have ended the drive, they decided to take the yards and give the Raiders another third down. There was another one where the Raiders were driving, and Derek Carr, you know, got the defense to jump off sides and gave him a free first down. That led to points. So, I mean, in a close game that comes down to 1 point, there are definitely a lot of opportunities. It was nice to see Khalil Mack finally get in there. So he did get his first sack of the year, but he was in the backfield the whole game. I think he got two or three holding penalties. He hit the quarterback a couple times. I mean, the Raiders' defense only got two sacks today, but they were in the backfield the whole time. So to your point, the Raiders' defense is still evolving and coming together, but they had a pretty good outing today from the standpoint that they bent, but they didn't break, and they came up with a play at the end of the game when they needed it, and that was all it took. The Raiders won three road games this year to start off the season. Now it's time to go back home and try to get one against the San Diego Chargers next week.
And that starts two straight weeks of division games, which is definitely going to be interesting. After this this week on Sunday Night Football, the Chiefs are going to the bye, and then we face each other as soon as the Chiefs come out of that bye. So I was watching this game, hoping to see some weakness. Unfortunately, I didn't find that much. I'm definitely very excited for our matchup, but I hope that, unlike the Ravens, Andy Reid remembers to run the ball late in the game when that is the thing that's keeping you in the game.
He is a stalwart for clock management late in games. I think that's what he's known for. So you shouldn't have anything to worry about when it comes to clock management late in the game. So you should be good.
Oh, yeah, definitely. That's totally what we're known for. All right, man. Well, thanks a lot. Congratulations on the victory, and see you in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, see you in a couple of weeks, man.
And next up is the Seattle Seahawks crushing 27-17 win on the road in New York against the Jets. The Jets once again stumble a bit with some more poor quarterback play by Ryan Fitzpatrick. But I'm gonna give the first word to the victor here, Justin. It was a good day for Russell Wilson. Surprisingly, he stayed upright for most of it. How did you guys pull off this win?
Well, going into the game, I thought it was going to be much closer because of how good that Jets defensive line was and how awful the offensive line has been. But the return of rookie Jermaine Ifedi made such a substantial difference. There was still some pressure. The defensive line of the Jets was still good, but it wasn't dominant like I think it would have been otherwise. So because of that key piece that was back, Russell Wilson had more time in the pocket. There were more holes for the running backs, although there wasn't a ton there. But by giving him time to let his playmakers, especially Jimmy Graham, get downfield, they were able to just shred a badly overmatched Jets secondary.
And so, Andrew, I know that you think the real loser in this game was me for talking all summer about how you guys needed to re-sign Ryan Fitzpatrick, but go ahead, give us your side of this thing.
Well, it's the same old story with the Jets. No matter what it is, they can't defend tight ends. They can't defend running backs out of the backfield, and they don't have a quarterback. And it's the same thing year to year to year, and that's what happened today. And it just, you look at the difference between the two teams, how easy it was for Seattle to move the ball versus, like, it just seemed every time the Jets, like, Fitzpatrick throws the ball with such high effort. Like, he puts everything into it, and just, it's like a microcosm of the Jets' offense, like how hard it is for them to get yardage. The only way they got yards all day was either Marshall beating Sherman here and there on, like, back shoulder plays, or Bilal Powell on dump offs. Other than that, they had no shot of moving the ball. And then on defense, it's the same old story. Can't defend the running backs, can't defend the tight ends, and there's going to be one or two blown coverages a game. Like, some wide receiver, I don't even know what his name is, number 19, I think McAvoy, scored a touchdown where there wasn't a single guy even looking in this direction, and the Seattle scored. And then the thing that bothers me the most, and it's probably the biggest factor, because it's the biggest long-term issue, is I really thought Todd Bowles was a good coach. Especially last year, it felt like he had the team prepared most of the time. But, like, this year, it's been an abomination, whether it be having his players ready in terms of scheme, in terms of not blowing coverages, or even in game management. There were back-to-back plays in the second half, they lost timeouts. And the score is misleading, too, because the Jets had 7 points on a play that I've never really seen before, where Fitzpatrick got sacked, and it seemed like the ball came out of his hands very quick before the arm was going forward. And the rookie wide receiver out of Clemson, Sherron Peake, picked it up and fumble recovered it for a touchdown after running like another 70 yards. So there really wasn't anything good for this Jets team today. I mean, the Jets D-line played well, but again, as Justin said, it wasn't good enough. Well, it wasn't dominant enough in order to make up for everything else on this Jets team. And with the schedule coming up, it's 1-6 is looking like a real possibility.
Well, and for you, Justin, you know, speaking of things that did look good, Jimmy Graham looked like he's back and he's healthy. You also had, you know, the first couple carries by C.J. Spiller as a Seahawk. Do you feel like this game shows that you guys are back on track, or do you think that you were just able to take advantage of, you know, Fitzpatrick throwing three more interceptions and a team that seems like it's in a bit of disarray?
You know, there's a lot to unpack there, so I'm going to try and get to it fairly quickly. Ryan Fitzpatrick played better than his stats would indicate. Several of those interceptions hit his players dead in the hands and then just popped up. I mean, the only one that was really on him was the first of Richard Sherman's two interceptions. And by the way, I was looking forward to that battle because they had Sherman shadowing Marshall. Marshall clearly won the battle in the first half decisively, and Sherman clearly won it in the second half. So I want there to be another round because that was awesome. Jimmy Graham looked like he was the best player on the field. Like, this looked like the Jimmy Graham from 3 or 4 years ago. Not only was he, you know, did he make a lot of catches, but he had guys draped over him in traffic, these acrobatic one-handed catches. Like, none of these were, like, just blown coverage, he's wide open, you hit him. Like, he fought for every one of those, and so he looked dominant on the field. So to me, it's less so about kind of the long-term trajectory of the team at this point, and it's about those little things, right? Jimmy Graham looks like he's back. You've got Jermaine Ifedi back. C.J. Spiller looks like, at least, you know, early returns, like he pretty much settled right in. I didn't expect him to do as much as he did, but he looked good. I mean, you know, all the wide receivers played well. The defense played pretty well. So all those little things going into the bye look really, really good. I just don't think it's quite, you know, an indictment on other team season at this point.
What Justin said about Fitzpatrick was right, that the three interceptions, two of them probably weren't his fault. But the first one, which was probably the turning point of the game, the Jets were down 17-10. They were driving. They're around at midfield. They just made a nice play on a Brandon Marshall back shoulder play that could have been called pass interference on Marshall. They ended up calling it on Sherman, weirdly. I just thought, you just don't call anything there. But then literally the next play, they ran the exact same play, a back shoulder play to Marshall, and Sherman had his eyes in the backfield the whole time and picked it off. And that was the deciding factor in the game. After that, the Seattle went down and scored, and that was it. So, yeah.
What people need to understand about Richard Sherman is, you know, there's not a lot of yards on him because people don't throw his way. And it's not because you can't complete passes, you know. You can complete passes on Richard Sherman, but if you keep throwing his way, he will take the ball away. That's his game, is taking it away. And, you know, the early success came back to bite them late in the game.
Yep. All right. Well, with this, the Seahawks move, for now at least, pending the Los Angeles Arizona game. They're at the top of the division, whereas the Jets move now to third. And unfortunately, as we'll be talking about soon, the Buffalo is gonna, you know, keep making this a difficult division to get back in the head of, it seems. And the Jets have a tough road coming up ahead of them. But thanks a lot, guys, and good luck next week.
All right. Yep.
We now move to the Denver Broncos' 27-7 victory over the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in Tampa. And for the second week in a row, it's been quite rainy in Tampa. This game was delayed late, but it really didn't matter. It was already out of hand at that point. You know, Lewis, the Denver Broncos superfan, and I have been going back and forth for a good 9 months about how I had been predicting their fall at least a few notches down in the peg and in the pecking order in our division. That is not the case. As Lewis has been saying, honestly, this defense is just so good that, you know, basically mediocre or average quarterback play will continue their reign of dominance. I mean, that was really the case here. Trevor Siemian went down with an injury early in this game. He still got a touchdown, went 5 of 7 for 68. And Paxton Lynch, the first-round pick for the Denver Broncos, he came in and led also a respectable effort for them. He went 14 of 24 for 170 yards and a touchdown. And C.J. Anderson had another fairly typical C.J. Anderson day. Nothing flashy, but enough to get them going on the ground and extending those long drives. For Tampa, you know, it really was the Denver Broncos that were stymieing them at every turn. Jameis Winston did not have a good game, but I chalk that up more to Denver's defense than anything else. Jameis Winston went 17 of 35 for 179 yards and zero touchdowns, two interceptions. They were not able to get things going on the ground. And for the Broncos, it was a mix of turnovers and stops and really that defensive domination that kept them in it. Denver Broncos go up 27-7, win this, are now in a good lead in the AFC West, while the Tampa Bay Buccaneers fall to 1-3 and 2 games back from Atlanta in the NFC South. And we now move on to the Dallas Cowboys' 24-17 win over the San Francisco 49ers. The 49ers actually got up early in this game, went up 7-0 with Blaine Gabbert looking like the sort of precision passer that I think San Francisco's been hoping would emerge out of their particularly interesting QB group. But as the game wore on, the Cowboys just had more firepower. Ezekiel Elliott went off for 23 carries, racked up 138 yards and a touchdown. And Dak Prescott also had himself a fairly solid day. Went 23 of 32 for 245, at 7.7 yards per attempt and two touchdowns. He did take a couple of sacks, despite the solid O-line of the Cowboys. But this was still a game that basically slipped away from the 49ers towards the middle, and they never quite got it back. Cole Beasley had himself a long pass towards the end that allowed him to essentially run out the clock, and the 49ers were just not able to get back into it. However, Jeremy Curley, who is a guy who had not been very high on their depth chart at wide receiver early on in the season, he did have a very good game, catching six balls for 88 yards and a touchdown. And in the on defense, both Antoine Bethea and Michael Wilhoit had, you know, they each had 12 tackles and generally had good games. But again, pass rush wasn't able to get there. Tank Carradine had a couple of QB hits, and Charles Davis, Ronald Blair shared a sack with Navarro Bowman getting one as well. But this was just not a game where the 49ers, even playing at home, could match just the sheer offensive output of Dallas.
All right, this is Justin, the Seahawks superfan. I'm going to be recapping the LA Rams versus the Arizona Cardinals, an NFC West matchup with big implications for my Seahawks. This was such a classic NFC West LA Rams type of game. It was ugly. It looked like, for the most part, Arizona was the better team. They moved the ball much more easily. But that really, really good Rams defensive line did what they did against my Seahawks and did what they do, and that was get pressure. They made it difficult to run the ball. They made it difficult to pass the ball. While the Rams were able to keep things close, they were able to squeak a couple of big touchdowns to Brian Quick. That Brian Quick that nobody's ever actually seen do anything. Case Keenum had a couple of nice passes that pretty much broke open to leading to a couple of touchdowns. Big news, honestly, though, is for the Arizona Cardinals quarterback Carson Palmer ended up leaving with a concussion. He was playing pretty all right, but again, moving the ball but not able to punch it into the end zone. But he hit his head pretty hard on the turf and was removed to be evaluated for a concussion. That's something to keep an eye on. You know, I'm not a doctor, shocker, but I can't help but think that as the quarterback is a little bit older, he's going to be a little bit more prone for that sort of thing. And Palmer's never been the most mobile guy to begin with. And so, you know, he finished last year playing hurt. I was a little concerned that he would get banged up this year and carry some of that over, and that's kind of proven to be the case. I've been saying all offseason that I think Arizona is kind of shell-shocked, and I expected them to be much, much worse than a lot of people anticipated, and that's coming to fruition. They've got plenty of talent. David Johnson still looks like he's a superstar. You know, they've still got those great wide receivers and some really good playmakers on defense, even if that vaunted secondary got tore up a little bit. If they can get right and figure their stuff out, I still think they're a Super Bowl contender. But right now, they're going through exactly what I expected. They're really, really struggling just to perform to their level of talent, and that's a huge issue. On the flip side, Jeff Fisher, who everybody was ready to fire after week one, has won his subsequent three games, including over the top two teams in the NFC West, the Seahawks and the Cardinals. That puts the Rams in first place after 4 weeks in the NFC West, as crazy as that is to sound. I still think this is a team that could just as well finish the season with only 4 wins, even though they're already at 3. They'll probably go 7-9 like a Jeff Fisher team does, but at least in the early going, they're doing really, really well. This is a team that always plays division foes really, really strong and struggles against the rest of the NFL, and now that they've kind of used up their first batch of division games, I think that's what you're going to see. You're going to see them fall back to earth pretty quickly. All in all, as a Seahawks fan, I'm pleased with the result because I'm much more worried about Arizona for long-term reasons than I am about the Rams. However, it certainly would have been nice to say that the Seahawks are in first place after this week, heading into our bye. That being said, the Rams earned the victory. They fought hard. They've got some talent, especially on that defensive line. So, for now, Arizona is continuing to search for answers, and the Jeff Fisher-led Rams are sitting alone atop the NFC West.
And in yet another game that was decided really in the last minute or two by one team's mistakes, it was the New Orleans Saints triumphing 35-34 over the San Diego Chargers. And I know our Chargers superfan Ken here is hurting, so I'm just going to toss the ball to him here first. Ken, you know, two fumbles in the final minutes to have this game slip away from you guys. What are you feeling and who do you blame?
So I'm not going to give you any analysis on how this game played out because it played out exactly how every other person in the entire world thought it would be. Saints defense is bad. Chargers defense is okay. Chargers offense is good. Chargers are going to score more than the Saints and they're going to win. That's not what happened. And this falls on the coaching staff. This is the third time this season that I felt that my team has been better, but they don't win. And these mistakes are unacceptable. The beat reporters in San Diego have been calling for Mike McCoy's head for the last, I would say, year. And I've disagreed with them the entire way through. Not anymore. Get him out. We lose too much. The team is too good to be 1-3. We lost to the Saints at home. We literally, the game plan that everyone thought was going to happen, happened. And in the last 2 minutes, we gave the game away. And at this point, I can't reconcile. Fire everyone except for Tom Telesco. That's the only person I like. Rivers and Tom Telesco. I can't do that. It's inexplicable.
Well, and so far, I mean, in 4 games for the Chargers, who are 1-3, it's been one dominating performance over the Jacksonville Jaguars. And all three of the other games, though, have come down to, it seems like, missed opportunities and collapses at the very end of the game. I mean, although a lot of that, though, I mean, it was dropped passes, fumbles. I mean, is there any part of you that blames the execution on the players, or do you think this is just a failure for of the coaches getting them prepared?
If you would have asked me that same question last week or a year ago or any time within the last 5 years, I would have said, yeah, no, it's definitely not the coach's fault. At this point, I'm done. I've had bad coaching on my team for way too long. I've had to deal with Norv Turner and Marty Schottenheimer in the playoffs and now Mike McCoy. It's too much. No. At this point, it's not about the players. It's about the coaching. It's about the ownership. I feel like the Browns right now.
Well, and for you, Chris, you know, the Saints get their first win of the season here on the road in, I mean, frankly, in a bit of surprising fashion, given that they were down by 14-plus points at some point in this fourth quarter. And you, Chris, you were saying off the air that you didn't think this was particularly inspiring or encouraging game for your team either, but I mean, what do you take away from the game?
Well, I mean, it's always nice to get a win one way or the other. This is the first time on this show I get to be on the other end of the call, which is pretty great, but there's a lot of concern that Drew Brees is hurt, which would make sense. I mean, I've never seen him short a receiver on a crossing route by 10 yards before, so that would be just kind of the icing on the cake. That has been this season, as if we lose for Breeze for any period of time. But I mean, I if I'm going to be optimistic about anything, and I know it's odd because the Saints defense gave up 34 points. Dennis Allen is doing the best he can with a hodgepodge group. You know, the last two plays on defense were Sterling Moore, who we just picked up, and B.W. Webb. These are guys that teams didn't want, and they're our starting corners. So it's great to get a win. I'm still not sure how it happened, but we'll take it, and we'll go in a bye week. Can't lose a bye week. So Saints are undefeated these next 2 weeks.
That's what I was going to point out is actually, yeah, that B.W. Webb, he had three passes defensed, and that final interception that sort of sealed the game. And overall, at least, I mean, I only tuned into this game very late, but there it looked like your cornerback group was making plays. Nick Fairley has showed up in this game with a sack and a half and a tackle for loss and four QB hits. Paul Kruger, even, who I think a lot of teams thought he had nothing left, he had half a sack, a tackle for loss, pass defense, and two QB hits. So, you know, it looks like the Saints are finally piecing together a real defense, but one that still gave up 34 points. Do you see this group as one that's improving, or are you sort of hedging your bets on that?
Can I jump in real quick?
Go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely.
Chris, I'm very happy for you. I'm very happy for Drew Brees. I've actually met him. He lives in San Diego. But on behalf of the entire San Diego Chargers organization, you're welcome for the win today.
Oh, thank you.
And I don't. I'm just gonna seep back into San Diego Charger depression after this,
which is understandable.
Look, man, I've had to watch it three times this year. One of them to the Falcons. It ain't never easy. But as I say with this game here, to continue the trend, Kruger was injured in the first half and didn't come back. It looks like he's got a back injury. So we continue to add to the deepest IR in the league. But no, I think the secondary, and I've been doing this on the post, these are a lot of young players, but they're showing promise. Crowley played very well today. Crowley, I thought, played very well last week against Julio Jones as well. And even with the Giants until that late Victor Cruz touchdown, you know, these are undrafted players that we've unearthed that really needed a season off or a season to grow, and unfortunately weren't able to get it. You know, the Saints made a lot of changes today, one being Von Bell starting over Jarius Bird, which I called for in our preview. And it was a huge upgrade. Bird has very limited range. He did make that interception in the end zone today. That's possibly the first, second interception he's had since he joined the Saints. Maybe the third good play he's had. So there is youth. There is talent on this defense. You just have to get healthy. You know, I feel like we'd be having a much different conversation if Bro and P.J. Williams were still on the field and Sheldon Rankin. So we are getting a couple of them back here in the coming weeks. And if this defense can just be average, the Saints start to put together some wins.
Great. Well, thanks a lot for joining, guys. And I hope the Saints start getting healthy and the Chargers start figuring out what ails them.
Wonderful. Take care, buddy.
All right. Have a good one, guys.
All right. I'm here with Nick, our Chiefs fan, and Greg, our Steelers fan. So, Greg, let's start with you. Thoughts on your narrow last-minute victory?
It was a great first half. Perfect storm happened, the Knicks, Chiefs there, kind of a, but, and you know what, by the end of the game, honestly, I fell asleep. It was an entertaining win for us in the first half, and I don't know where to go from there, really.
Yeah, it was exactly that kind of game. I mean, the final score, 43-14. Nick, when did you realize you were in trouble?
This game, I mean, pretty much like Greg said, this game was won in the first quarter, and it was a perfect storm. The only time when this game was really sort of in jeopardy and really in the air was as the Pittsburgh kickoff was in the air on its way down on the opening kickoff. We then returned it. And from there on, we were losing the game fairly handily. And look, I mean, as I said in my preview, I had this chalked down as a loss, going back to the off season. It just, I mean, on paper, it was the toughest game on our schedule. I still didn't expect the Chiefs to be quite this bad. And actually, I mean, if they had lost this game by a fairly narrow margin, or if they'd at least kept it competitive throughout most of it, I wouldn't be too worried. But slow starts have now become a pattern for this team all throughout this season. Obviously, it took the biggest comeback in our team's history to win Week 1 against the Chargers. Then we started slow with three turnovers in the first half against the Texans the next week, ended up losing that game. And then against the Jets, I mean, the Jets basically, with eight turnovers, essentially handed us that game. And so against the Steelers, obviously, I mean, even with the random things that were going well, which there wasn't much, I mean, you just can't play as bad as the Chiefs did early in this game against a good team on the road. You know, it was literally Murphy's Law. A fumble after one, you know, on our first play of one drive, a really bad interception where Smith decided to throw the screen when the running back was already on the ground, and it was a tipped ball, a really bad punt. I mean, it was just like, it was absolutely everything you could possibly screw up in a small amount of possessions early in a game is what put the Steelers up 22-0 in the first quarter. Chiefs never came back in it. I mean, they scored 14 garbage time points in the fourth quarter. But this is an absolute domination decimation by the Steelers, and there's not a whole lot else to pull from it other than Chris Conley, our number two or number three wide receiver, looked pretty good. That's pretty much it.
So the Steelers scored 3 points last week, scored 43 points this week. The only personnel difference is the addition of Le'Veon Bell. Greg, help me make sense of what's going on.
Well, I mean, that's not exactly true. I mean, Le'Veon Bell definitely looked good, but he wasn't the difference in the game. I mean, the Steelers dealt with a lot of in-game injuries last week to starters. Like Shazier last week got burned for a 70-some yard touchdown because he was trying to play with a bum knee that he obviously couldn't play with. So, and that started off the second half. So when you had things like that happening last week, it was kind of the perfect storm against the Steelers. And this is just the yin to that yang this week. I mean, this doesn't say anything about the Chiefs, in my opinion. I think the Chiefs just ran into it was rainy. It was just a horrible night. And, you know, you have one of those every once in a while. I still think the Chiefs are one of the, you know, top teams in the AFC. And I don't think this means that all the Steelers' problems are cured. I think they still got more injuries tonight. I don't know. Next week against the Jets, it could easily go back the other way. I'm mostly a pessimist when it comes to all these injuries because I don't know if you guys know this, but Artie Burns was out there a ton, and he is not ready to play. If, you know, Brandon Marshall is locked up against him, it's 6 points. So.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I've literally never heard of Artie Burns. If you told me that was the name of the owner of the Atlanta Falcons or something, I would absolutely believe you. So, Nick, where's your team go from here?
Well, like I said, I mean, I expected the Chiefs to be at 2-2 at this point of the schedule. Because, I mean, they faced basically, you know, four potential AFC playoff teams to start out the year without Charles, without Justin Houston. Charles did have a couple of touches in this game. I mean, I think they had planned on probably him being more of a factor, but then when they saw that this game was totally unwinnable after, you know, basically a quarter, they're like, nah, there's no point in us risking him. And so, I mean, that's sort of the way that I saw this going. They now go into their bye. They're going to have a week to get everybody healthier and to, you know, dig through this film. Charles will probably be back in a full-time role when we come back in week six against the Oakland Raiders. That's going to be a really interesting, important game for both the division and probably the AFC in general, at least, you know, sort of the bottom edge of the AFC playoff picture. And Justin Houston's going to be coming back. He's on a PUP, so he can't come back till week seven. But he's going to be, you know, coming back mid-season. I'm not too worried, kind of like Greg was saying. But still, I mean, you never like to see, you know, the team be as inept as they were. Granted, you know, we're going against a Steelers team that felt like it really needed to make a statement after the egg that they laid last week. And they just made so many mistakes early on that this was an unsalvageable game overall.
All right, so Greg, I'm going to give the last word to you as the winner. Ben Roethlisberger was 22 of 27 for 300 yards and 5 TDs. Le'Veon Bell had 144 yards and 18 carries, and Sammy Coates had some big catches. Who gets your game ball today?
It's obviously Ben. I mean, you can't throw 5 touchdown passes and not get the game ball, in my opinion. And Le'Veon Bell's like long run at the end was just garbage kind of run out the clock. Ben, he does what he does. You give him time, he's open. The Chiefs had a depleted secondary even. They were starting a rookie out there that they picked on. I'm not going to pat Ben too hard on the back for picking on a rookie.
All right, guys, there you have it. So there's the Sunday night game. Nick, Greg, thank you guys for jumping on with me.
Of course.
Thanks.
All right, that's going to do it for our Week 4 recaps. Thank you to all the super fans. Thank you for Nick for helping with the hosting. Thank you to BetDSI.com for the promo code FANUP10. If you want to reach out to us, you can. You can find us via email, nextfanup@gmail.com. You can also reach us on Twitter @nextfanup. Please hit us up if you have any questions, comments. We're also looking for a couple of super fans. If you didn't hear your team represented, that's probably a good indicator that we could use one. In particular, Tampa Bay, I know we need a fan for. The Lions, we need one for, as well as a couple of others. So what did we learn today? We learned that Julio Jones might be the baddest man on the planet. We learned that the Steelers will look terrible on a random game throughout the season, which I think we've known, before coming back and looking incredibly strong. We learned that Jimmy Graham is back. We learned that the Jaguars have a home field advantage. It just happens to only be in London, England. And with that, I'm going to leave you in the hands of the head coach of the first place team in the NFC West, Jeff Fisher of the LA Rams.
Well, I think we learned today that, this game is four quarters long.